Sanamong to revisit some of the places she'd shown him before. He brought Harry, who looked just like his father but was almost beautiful, if a boy could be beautiful, with high cheekbones and wavy hair. He was so perfect that it almost hurt Alice to look at him. Something clicked in her. She didn't know exactly what it was, but she knew that a new part of her life was just beginning. Alice returned to Jake's condo, pulled off the police tape, and tried the door. It was locked. She thought that would be the case and removed a credit card from her purse, picking the lock the way she'd done as a teenager whenever she'd forgotten her key. It was dusk outside, and the interior of the condo was dark. Her phone had a light on it, and she used that to look around. She went straight up the stairs and into the bedroom, so unchanged since she'd last been in there that she could almost feel time falling away. She turned off her phone's light and let her eyes adjust. The bed was made, loosely pulled together, and she ran her hand along the chenille bedspread. She remembered that her mother used to sleep in this room before she did, and then was suddenly alarmed to realize that she was nearly the same age as her mother was when she died. She shook the thought of her mother out of her head and reminded herself of the reason she was here. Jake had taken pictures of her many years ago, back when she hadn't known any better, and she wanted to make sure they weren't around for just anyone to find. When she lived here, he kept the photographs in a copy of James Michener's Hawaii that was always on his bedside table. She should have taken them back then, but she had decided to leave that small memento to Jake. But now he was on the national news, and so was she. She needed to get those pictures back. It took a while, but she found them in one of the hardcover books stacked on Jake's dresser. She quickly riffled through them, marveling at the beauty of her young body. She stared into her own eyes in the photographs, wondering what that different person had been thinking. She put the pictures in her purse. Walking back to her car, she noticed that there was a station wagon with a boat trailer next to her Volvo that hadn't been there before. The vehicle gave her a bad but familiar feeling, as though she should have known whose car it was. But the feeling passed, and then she was annoyed by how far the trailer jutted out, and how hard it would be for her to navigate her own car out of the lot. Rounding the boat on its trailer, she could see two people still in the car, and decided she would ask them to move out of her way. But as she got closer, the light in the station wagon went on, the driver's side door opened, and a familiar man got out. "Alice," Mr. Bergeron said, and stepped toward her, hand extended. Then Alice heard a sound like a fuse being lit, and her entire body stiffened. She felt herself trying to speak, but no words came out, and she fell, the side of her head smacking the pavement. Her whole body hurt. Then her face was covered with a damp, sweet-smelling cloth, and the world went dark. She jerked awake, her nostrils burning, her head throbbing, and something sharp pressing painfully into her back. There was the sound of water, and the world was rocking back and forth, and she thought, "I'm on a boat." And then she remembered the parking lot and Mr. Bergeron. She was nauseous, spit pooling under her tongue, and she shut her eyes. The darkness closed in. Then her nostrils were burning again, and she shook her head, her body tensing. "Hi, Alice. You awake?" She tried to say something, but all that came out was a groan. She opened her eyes again, the nausea had begun to pass, and found she was able to keep them open. She could see a sky filled with stars, the dim figure of Mrs. Bergeron crouched over her, her face ravaged by cancer, wearing a woolen hat on her head. Sitting up, Alice looked around, the twisting motion of her neck making her head hurt worse. They were far out in the ocean, the outboard motor silent, with no sign of land in any direction. Mrs. Bergeron slid back and seated herself across from Alice. water sloshed in the bottom of the boat. "Where am I?" Alice asked.
"This is right around where Gina drowned, more or less," Mrs. Bergeron said. "I thought you'd remember it."
"You know I don't," Alice said. Mrs. Bergeron sighed, then coughed, four sharp, dry hacks that didn't sound healthy. Alice knew she was dying from bronchial cancer because Mrs. Bergeron had come by and visited her shortly after Bill had died. She'd confronted her about Bill's death, telling Alice she knew she had something to do with it, just as she'd had something to do with her daughter Gina's death 20 years earlier. It was disconcerting, the visit, but not surprising. Over the years, Vivian Bergeron had accused Alice of being with Gina the night she had drowned many times. But for the previous 10 years, Alice had barely heard from her, and she had almost begun to believe that she'd never hear from her again. But Mrs. Bergeron had come to Gray Lady, wrapped in a too-big raincoat, the yellow skin of her face barely concealing the skull underneath. Alice had invited her in, listened to her rant, and, as she always did, attempted to be civil. She'd asked after her health, and Mrs. Bergeron said she had bronchial cancer and was happy to leave a world where people like Alice Moss got away with murder. Alice wondered if the old woman's mind was going, as well as her body.
"You can tell the truth now, Alice," Mrs. Bergeron said from the other side of the boat. "It's just you and me."
The wind off the ocean snatched at the faint words, but Alice could still hear them. "Your husband," Alice said, remembering him from the condo parking lot.
"Where?" "He's a good and loyal man, my husband," she said, her voice cracking. "I needed him to do one last thing for me, and he did it."
"You're crazy."
"I am a little crazy, you know, I think. That's on you, too, Alice. I was fine before you took my Gina away. I never beat it."
"What are you going to do?" Alice said. Her mind was beginning to clear, and she realized that something was cutting into her left wrist. It was a pair of handcuffs, attached to a linked chain. She tugged at it. The chain was snaked through one of those large bodybuilding weights, a disc that looked like it was probably 100 pounds, sitting on the middle seat of the old boat. The chain passed through the weight, stretching across to Mrs. Bergeron, attached to a handcuff around her wrist.
"I've already done it," she said, holding up her arm, showing it to Alice, rattling the chain. "There's no getting out of these. The keys to the handcuffs are already on the bottom of the ocean. It's over, Alice. It's just you and me."
With her free hand, Mrs. Bergeron raised what looked like half a cigarette to her nose and inhaled deeply. Alice thought, smelling salts. It was what she had used to wake Alice up, and what she was using to keep herself going. Alice's body went cold. She shook her head, trying to concentrate on what was happening. The sloshing at the bottom of the boat was getting louder, and water was now licking at her ankles.
"The boat's sinking," she said. "It is. You don't have much time. We have the same time now, the two of us."
Alice tugged harder at the cuff around her wrist.
"You can't do this."
Mrs. Bergeron smiled, and she looked like a skull, her teeth too big for her face.
"I am doing this," she said. "You took my baby away from me, and this is my last wish."
She laughed weakly at this, then said,
"It's my make-a-wish."
Alice stood and took a step toward Mrs. Bergeron. The boat lurched, and her foot crunched through the hull. Water began to rush in.
"It's no good," Mrs. Bergeron said. "I couldn't stop it if I wanted to. We are going to die together. The only thing you can do now is confess. I can't make you do it, but it might make you feel better. It's for you, not me. I already know what you did.
I just want you to have the opportunity to know it as well.
Gina was a drug addict. She was nuts. The boat tipped hard to one side, and Alice gripped the edge as the bodybuilding weight slid off the middle seat and into the water. Her mind was rapidly flipping between shock at what was happening and a calculation of her odds. She wrenched at the cuff around her left hand, but it wouldn't come off. She scanned the boat for anything that would help her float.
Maybe she was, but that's not why she died, Mrs. Bergeron said.
She was lucky to die when she did, Alice said.
That's it, honey. Tell the truth.
Mrs. Bergeron gripped the side of the boat as well. Her eyes were huge in her head.
There's no way out.
I couldn't have saved her. That's the truth.
You were swimming with her, though, right?
There was nothing I could do. This isn't fair. The boat tipped, and Alice leaned hard the other way. How did you... she began. How am I here? Mrs. Bergeron laughed.
I have less than a month to live, and I could have died in a hospital bed in pain, or I could take you with me. It was an easy choice, and I have a husband who was willing to help me.
Alice started to lunge toward Mrs. Bergeron, but the boat turned over, and the two women went into the cold, salty water, the splintered boat drifting out of reach. Alice felt the pull of the weight on her left wrist. She desperately pawed at the water with her free right hand, then grabbed out at Mrs. Bergeron as though she could help her stay afloat. Together, they went under the surface, holding onto each other, almost hugging, as they sank. I'm dying, Alice thought. And the thought was scary, but it was also so unfair. She had never hurt anyone in her life. Her mother's face flashed through her mind. Not as she was toward the end, but the way she once looked, back when she'd been pretty. She was on a beach, sun and the scratchy sand and a swarm of scary gulls. Alice held onto the air in her lungs as long as she could, the black water roaring in her ears. And when she could hold out no longer, she opened her mouth and tried to breathe. It was seawater, cold and final, that filled her lungs.
This is Sarah Malo Christensen. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of All the Beautiful Lies, a novel, by Peter Swanson. This program was produced by B Audio Limited. Executive producer, Katie Ostroka. Text copyright 2018 by Peter Swanson. Production copyright 2018. By HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.